At Farm to Table, we know how confusing healthcare is. We're here to simplify the healing process. We believe that healthcare should be simple. It should help people feel better. That's why we started the Table Talk podcast, to gather around the table with you, no matter where you are. We want to come and learn together and discuss a new healthcare approach that addresses the root cause of your symptoms. The journey for each person is unique, but together we can thrive.
Hi, welcome to the Table Talk podcast. I'm so excited for our episode today because we have with us today a special guest who is not on our team. A lot of times we have pharmacists that are on our team and they are amazing, fabulous people around the table. So today is more of a one-on-one interview style. So I hope you enjoy this. And so I wanted to welcome our guest today, which is Elise Wagner, and she is the co-founder and chief well-being officer for the Functional Medicine Coaching Academy. So thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to reconnect
you. Yeah. And so we met this summer. We went to a conference, which is a fabulous conference called the Global Leadership Summit. For those that are leaders and just even, I mean, I felt like anybody could have taken away lots of amazing things from that conference. Yeah. So we got to bond over a baseball game on the rooftops across from Wrigley Field. And one of the things we started talking about, we have kids similar ages. And one of the things we started talking about was our birth story. And so we had some similarities in our maybe, I guess, not ideal first story for our first child. And so why don't you just share a little bit about your story and like even beyond just the birth story, like how that sort of brought you to where you are and what you're doing with coaching and helping other people. So you can start wherever you'd like.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll start, you know, what got me into this field in general. Really started like, 20 some odd years ago when I was 13 years old, which is a pretty young age to get into something and find your purpose, but I'm pretty grateful for it. Really short, I'll keep it short, but I was taunted as obese Elise in middle school.
Oh man.
No idea you could rhyme my name with something, but you know, lo and behold, there you go. And it was true. I was always thin in my arms and my legs, but I had kind of like a nice big belly and I never felt good. And I was also a very curious child. I always wondered, well, okay, yeah, why don't I look like everyone else? And why do I have this big belly? And why don't I feel good? And I want to feel better. I know I'm not supposed to feel this way. And so I went to my mom, who has been my biggest advocate. And I think I probably speak for all mamas, hopefully out there, that you guys all are your biggest advocates for your kiddos and a voice for them in so many ways. And my mom truly was a voice for me. And I, you know, I went to her and I said, I don't like the way I look or feel and I want to change. And, you know, if your mom listening to this and when your kids came to say that to you, you're going to really listen, right? I think. And at a time, even, you know, 20 some odd years ago, where I think it's still kind of the norm to be like, oh, you're fine. Oh, everything's okay. You're going to get through this. And she actually helped to find a holistic nutritionist for me to go and see when all of the registered dietitians at that time would not see me due to liability reasons because of my age. So it was a blessing in disguise because this holistic nutritionist was actually taking a functional medicine approach at the time, did not call herself functional medicine, more holistic. And what I mean by that is she took a very client-centered approach and met me where I was at. She asked me a lot of open-ended questions and we co-created a plan together. And so that was truly my first experience with behavior change. I was motivated. I was ready. It was important enough to me. I felt confident. I had support and I was ready to take action. So I did take the bull by the horns. I implemented the plan that we put together and it was really simple when I look back at it. We really just took out the crap, the processed foods and put in whole real foods. And I say I had some vitamin D, not like the, you know, traditional vitamin D, but D as in discipline. And I was really disciplined between that summer of eighth grade and freshman year. And I put into action what we had put together. And within 2 months, it was like someone just put a pin in me and I just shrunk and I lost 50 pounds. My hair started to grow. My skin was clearing up. My nails were growing. And I said, holy guacamole, food is medicine. Food is medicine, and I want to get this message out to the world. But who's going to listen to a 13-year-old? And you know,
right? Well, nowadays 13-year-olds are like influencers on YouTube and Instagram, but that probably wasn't the case then.
No, yeah, I think I did not even get my first phone until I was like 16 or something.
Yeah,
but really that experience set me on my trajectory and my purpose and my path. I knew I wanted to help other people experience true health and what that actually feels like in your body. And so that first light bulb moment of like food is medicine, that was like one, you know, spark, right? But there was something that like was burning much deeper inside me, which was this question of like, why do we have all this information? But yet, even to this day, and even 20 years ago, people seem to be so paralyzed. They seem to be so stuck. Like we know what to do, but we're not doing it. And so, you know, fast forward, I went through undergrad. I became a nutritionist and did my undergrad degree in nutritional sciences and dietetics. Did not go the traditional RD route. It didn't align with my belief systems and where I wanted to go. And I was really interested in the psychology, the behavior change, the why. So that sent me out to Bastyr University in Seattle, Washington, where I was getting a dual master's in nutrition and clinical health psychology and pairing kind of food and mood together. And it was there that I got really sick and no one could figure out what was going on with me. And that's kind of in like the health, alternative health mecca, you know, world. And I was kind of losing hope in my body and in myself. And my parents were going to pull me out. They wanted to take me to the Mayo Clinic. And I was like, no, absolutely not. I believe in my body. I believe that it has the power to heal. I just have to get to the root cause. Well, step in functional medicine. And I found a functional medicine doctor. And we were able to get a genetic test done, came back positive for celiac. So I had an autoimmune disorder. Mm-hmm. So now here I am in Seattle, my second year in grad school with an autoimmune disorder, trying to make some serious life changes.
Sure.
And I was given two pieces of paper on like how to go gluten-free. And I'm like, no. Work. And I couldn't help but keep wondering, like, I cannot be the only one struggling. You know, there's got to be more people out there struggling like this or with something similar. And I kind of made this intention, set this intention of like, when I can get myself better and heal myself through whole real foods, a positive attitude, functional medicine, I want to help other people do the same. And that's kind of what set the intention of moving forward past, you know, I had a private practice. I moved back to Chicago, met Dr. Sandy. And together, she had a clinical psychology background and went through the Institute for Functional Medicine. We had a very shared vision and values for what we saw in the healthcare system, which is, we know, pretty broken and fragmented. Sure. And there's a huge gap. We wanted to close that gap and do that with health coaches, people who have the knowledge, not, you know, as much depth of a knowledge as a doctor might have, and they can't do the prescribing or the treatment or the protocols. But the people who can truly understand where you're at, meet you where you're at, and help get you to where you're wanting to go a little bit faster. I wish I had that when I had been diagnosed with my autoimmune disease, because it took me like over a year and a half to just get on the right path. So that's a little bit about how I got to functional medicine and health coaching in general.
Yeah, I think that's so important because, I mean, I see people over and over, and sometimes, like, I think I'm going to start requiring coaching as part of like working with me, because I give them the plan and then they come back and they're just like, nothing has happened. Like, they might have tried one supplement or maybe, but there's just like this freeze of this overwhelming component. And sometimes there's different reasons for that. Sometimes, like you said, psychology, you know, those kinds of things need to be involved. Maybe there's trauma and they need to do some kind of EMDR or other trauma, you know, focused therapy to really just clear their minds and help them to be able to take those action steps. But so often, like, providers don't have the time in their day to be able to have hour-long conversations with people and like helping identify all these other resources that they really should be pursuing. Where that's really, I feel like, the value of coaching. I mean, there's the whole, you know, psychological model of your, you know, in pre-contemplative stage, right? You know that there's an, or actually pre-contemplative, you're ignoring the issue whatsoever, right. But contemplative, you're like, okay, I see that there's a problem, but I'm not really sure, you know, what to do. But like getting to that next stage of like taking action is really difficult. And I think so many people, there's so much with functional medicine, like you said, it goes really in depth. And I watch eyes glaze over sometimes, and I don't even feel like I'm going that in depth with people. But for some reason, like that's how, you know, it's received like a foreign language, honestly, sometimes. So coaches can be so important in helping to just like get to the root of like, what is the piece that's missing in that transformation?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's awesome. Well, I'm so glad that you guys have this coaching academy. I don't know if you want to say anything about the coaching academy and share a little bit about what you guys are doing.
Yeah. Well, we are a collaboration with the Institute for Functional Medicine, and we have been going strong for over 9 years now, which is really exciting. It's really just become a movement. And I'll tell you, it started from truly this deep passion from both Sandra and myself, and just wanting to get this moving forward. And we've had so much support along the way. We've trained over 4,000 health coaches now internationally, over 6 countries in every single state. And our health coaches are just amazing human beings. They come from such different backgrounds. We have non-healthcare related, you know, people who are coming to our program, people who are in the health related fields. That spectrum is very wide, from medical doctors all the way to Pilates instructors. We have stay-at-home moms. We have people who are engineer background or accounting. And so truly, the only thing that really matters is that if you come with a purpose to learn and to want to serve and help others, and we do give you all the rest. We give you the education, the training. It's hands-on. It's a year-long program, and we have 2 start dates a year. And it is truly a community. We are here to support you both through the program and then the program in our alumni program. So yeah, we'd love to connect with people. If you're interested, if you want to learn more, you know, it can be a great career shift and or addition to what you're might be already doing, because people find very fulfilling and meaningful.
Yes. Awesome. Yeah. We can link the website in the show notes. So, All right. So circling back to, as this person that has discovered food is medicine and also discovered coaching and how important coaching is, now you're about to become a mom. And so what were sort of the things in your mind? Like, okay, you've got celiac at this point, and you also, you know, have radically changed your diet over the course of several years. So what is it that you're thinking as far as prepping? Like, what were you doing to prep for having a baby? And like, what are the things that you feel like you would want to tell new moms that are like thinking about, you know, how they do this from like a natural and holistic perspective?
Yeah. So, well, and I just want to start by saying, you know, every person's journey is going to be super unique and personalized. And I think that the foundation of functional medicine in general, right, it's a very personalized approach. For me, I always knew I wanted to have a home birth. That was just something that was important to me and I wanted to move forward with. And I also wanted to, because I have celiac disease, I knew from the beginning, I just had an inner knowing, right? Sometimes you have a knowing about things. I just knew that I was going to get my daughter tested genetically for celiac when I could. You can't do it until I think they're about 2 or 2.5 years old for the genetic piece. So we had to wait a while, but that was something that I had already kind of put in the back of my head of like, I'm going to plan on doing this, right? Other things that I did to really prep myself, of course, was eating all, you know, whole real foods, making sure that I was truly nourishing myself from a food perspective, from a sleep perspective, mm-hmm. and also from a stress perspective, because I'm running a business, we've got a team, running a household, running my own well-being, which is sometimes a full-time job, you know? And so I wanted to make sure that the environment my baby was living within was calm and as serene as possible, because I think we know that, and there's some good research out there of how you are during your pregnancy, right, can really impact the baby. And so what I would do And what I still do is have a pretty, I would say I really learned that vitamin D lesson and discipline with me. I'm pretty disciplined with my morning and my evening routines and a little bit throughout the day, but really those bookends of the day. And so one of the things I did was hypnobabies or hypnosis. And so that alongside some meditation, exercise, movement, you know, walking, doing a lot of my stretches and things like that, all to prepare, you know, throughout the 9 months to prepare for this baby to be born at home and to make sure I was staying as zen and calm as possible, which came in pretty handy considering the circumstances and what actually ended up taking place and happening during my childbirth.
Yeah. I would add to that, there's also a method called the Bradley method, which is well known as far as like a prep. They do have some resources on prenatal nutrition and exercise, and also, you know, really empower the partner to be involved in the birthing process and give them tools. Cause I think that's like one of the things that's missing from the sort of standard of care approach in our society, is like you go to like one birthing class or maybe two birthing classes that the hospital has, like in the majority of women, you know, across the United States. And sometimes your partner doesn't even come with you. Women are just showing up at these classes. And then, you know, you're getting like, okay, this is like the stages of labor. Here's a little bit about this and this that might happen in the hospital. And that's it. Like you're going home and you've been given the one or two page handout, like you said about the gluten-free. And then that's all they're getting. We did the Bradley birthing method classes here, and we met with like a group of people that were all, you know, pregnant due within 6 months or so. And it was really cool because there's like one couple that I still like sort of stay in touch with, like, I mean, not like friends, but like colleagues, and, you know, just having like sort of a community of people to ask questions to as you're preparing, like that piece was really nice as well. So it was like, I forget how many weeks it is. It was like a whole fall, like that we went from like September to like November and went through different topics each week that we were there. So I really appreciated that. I think they even have like hybrid options now if there's not like a group that meets in your area. But definitely something to check out, because again, like I just don't think that our current process for teaching women about childbirth is very good in general. So I don't know if you have any other thoughts about that.
I would agree. Yeah. We did go through a class and my husband was with me. So that was really nice that there was little couples there as well. So we got to connect, and I am still connected. A really great friend of mine and her son were still connected, which is wonderful. So yeah, I think there's a community piece that's missing. And also, you know, there's a lot of unknowns that can happen, right? And I would say personally for me, I don't know, when we were talking about this, like there's a lot of stuff that just isn't talked about. I personally felt like there was the shower, the baby shower, and all the gifts, and everything just seems to be so, you know, fun and rainbows and sunshine. But there's really some interesting transitions, you know, and again, everyone is so unique and different as they're going through their pregnancy, of course, giving birth, you know, labor and delivery, and then post-labor, of course. But there are so many things that I just didn't know and I had to experience firsthand. And I kept wondering, like, how come no one talks about this? How come there's no real support for this? I wish I would have known a little bit about this so I could have prepped and planned and prepared. You know, I felt like I had a good preps and plans for like food and nutrition and like the stress component of it. But I think that this would be, you know, a huge piece where if, you know, and they have like the nurse coaches that can come in, or nurses, or like the doulas, et cetera, that can kind of support afterwards. But I see that this would be a great place to have coaches who could come in and support even the mom's mental, emotional well-being, just where they're at, just to talk about it. Cause we have feelings, we have thoughts, we have a lot of things that come up that we're like, is this normal or not? I don't know, right? And it can be scary sometimes.
Yeah. And for a lot of people, I mean, this process can be somewhat traumatic. And I don't necessarily want to, sometimes that word is used lightly. And I know that there's lots of like different types of trauma, but depending on how it affects you and your mental status, like it can definitely by your body be perceived like that. And I really think for me, it was definitely one of those things that was like, okay, my body probably wasn't like functioning optimally. And then this like point in time was like, you know, the nail in the coffin sort of thing that put me over the edge. And my story was, you know, that we went, we were sort of told that we needed to be induced because the baby wasn't going to fit. And I was like, what? Like, how's that happen? Like, my husband's grandma had a baby like 11 pounds. Like, how is this child, like, you know, not going to be able to fit, right? And like, also, I feel like there's a lot of providers out there telling women like, well, you need to be induced because, I mean, yes, there are like legitimate reasons. So I don't want to discount that there are times where it is in the best interest to do this. But sometimes it is out of the convenience of a provider's on call tonight, or they're going to be gone this weekend, or whatever the situation is. Or even some women like are like, I'm done here. And I just want to start this process early. And I get that. Those last weeks are no fun. We get all of that. So I feel like there's a little bit of that. And for me, I didn't ask enough questions. I was just like, okay, like, let's do this. I should have gone home and taken a nap and then gone to the hospital. But then we just sort of went and grabbed our bags and then went. And then with that, we had hired a doula. We had met with her. We had met multiple times. She even came to our home. She had a website that looked like she was a doula. Well, turns out she was in jail when I had my first child. And I feel like I could have like a movie about this. So we had no doula. And so we were at this hospital, and about halfway through the pregnancy, I sort of was thinking like I should have switched providers, not because the doctor was bad. I really did like her, but because this practice had the policy where whoever was on call is who delivered you. So you didn't necessarily get that provider, but also because they only delivered at hospitals that did not have a tub or any kind of like additional natural birthing support type tools. So here I am in this hospital that doesn't have the natural birthing room or tub or anything. And I'm trying to use my Bradley method, ways of helping, but I was induced and the contractions were like super sporadic and like on top of each other. And so here we are like, with the induction was like in the evening, the night before, the next day, like in the middle of the night. I mean, it's just like terrible. Like, I've never been in so much pain. I had like a lot of hip pain and back pain, as a first time parent, like that process of your hips opening up is no joke. And they never go back. So those jeans beforehand, you just need to toss. But anyways, so I tried to use hot water and the shower and a hot pack, and like the nurse overnight was like fabulous and trying to hold my hips while my husband pushed in on my back. And like, but it just got to the point, and I think there were some other psychological stressors going on at the same time, that I just wasn't at a place where I was progressing. And then also have the energy to really put towards like the pushing part if I didn't get some rest because of the sporadicness of with the induction caused with the contractions. So I ended up getting an epidural, which I was super fearful of, and not saying, again, there's lots of choices out there. If you need it, you need it. And at this point I did take it. I was like bawling the whole time, like asking the nurse anesthetist if I was going to die, like all of these things. And so I don't necessarily regret getting the epidural at that point, because the new nurse in the morning was not as helpful. They had more patients to take care of on day shift, and like they couldn't be my doula. Like, my doula was in jail. That could be a further story, but we'll leave it at that. She got picked up on a traffic ticket or violation, but had embezzled money. Well, she got my money too, and never got it back. So anyways, and that's not to say bad things about doulas, because there's amazing doulas out there. It was just like a one in a million crazy situation. We did have a redemption with our second child with a doula. But basically, then I had the epidural, progress to where we could push. But my one regret about my first pregnancy is not asking to be in a different position during pushing. And then also, because the epidural does limit you a little bit about, not moving around as much, but I think we could have done things a little bit differently in that respect. But then also asking for it to be turned down during pushing. Like, I think they mentioned that in class, but I didn't really think about, like, in the moment, I wasn't reminded of that. And so no one in the team was like, hey, you really can't feel this. I don't see, like, you can really tell when the contractions are coming. And so I think that would have made a big difference about the time that I pushed and the effects that it was on my pelvic floor and things like that. So if I could go back to like that moment, that would be like the thing that I would change about that. But yeah, so I think like the stress of that situation, and then like coming home with a colicky baby and a baby that had the tongue tie, but probably wasn't bad enough for the hospital to identify. But like, it took me like 3 or 4 weeks to identify like, oh wow, this is why you're not latching well, or why nursing is not going well. We had gone to lactation consultants and had been to chiropractor visits for the different things. But it wasn't until I went to a dentist that does laser. And like, I had to figure all this out myself. So it wasn't like a provider said, like, yeah, hey, like, I think your child has tongue tie, or you should get evaluated for tongue tie. There's a lot of moms that, there's always this spectrum. And I think this is with any condition. There's like the really textbook like case, right? That like, we can see the like, you know, attachment and the tongue is not moving, right? So the hospital's like, yes, absolutely, you need to do something about this. But then there's like these more mild cases that do affect nursing relationships and breastfeeding relationships and aren't textbook like conditions, or you go to the lactation consultant, they're like, well, I think she's doing okay. Like, just make sure you do this and this. And so I think that was like, you know, people weren't necessarily missing like big textbook cases, but they were missing like the potential for this to be causing a problem here. So long story short, we got her tongue tie fixed with laser at the dentist that specialized in this, but the dentist was like so backed up, just happened to be at this time, that someone across town that used to do it wasn't doing it anymore. So all the people are coming to his practice, people were coming from out of state. So it was like another like 3 or 4 weeks. So I think we were like 7 to 8 weeks into this situation of just really poor sleep, really, you know, a child that probably was a little slightly malnourished in the process, because we weren't, you know, it was not for lack of milk supply, because that's a whole nother story. I had oversupply with milk, and turns out PCOS patients can be more prone to that. So we could have a whole conversation about that. But part of it was that she was getting a lot of like the early form milk and not the good fatty milk in the end. So I had to learn, like, even just breastfeeding, things like that, like, okay, well, maybe I'll need to feed on this side to make sure she gets the whole product mixed up, right? And then switch to the other side later and not do, you know, they tell you 15 minutes here or 15 minutes here or half the time here and half the time here. But that doesn't work for everybody. And I think that's what we were talking about at the beginning, is like, not everybody is going to be the same. And for these general recommendations that are on that handout, like, they try to make all this advice that like works for everybody. And so having like a coach, or, you know, that specialize in this, or postpartum doula, or somebody that really can like ask more of these targeted questions about your situation. And even if they don't have all the answers, asking the questions is so much of an important piece of the process to help you think about it. I mean, there's so much information out there online about breastfeeding, and new moms are up in the middle of the night, so you're scrolling, looking for information, trying to figure out how to get out of this situation where you're not sleeping and so tired and just all of this stuff, which also, you know, increases anxiety and changes mood, and, you know, your rest of your life is affected by the lack of sleep. And to me, sometimes looking back, it's like amazing. Like, how did I function? How did I work? How did I take care of people outside my home? Like, even 3 months after, like when you start to go back to work, and the fact that a lot of employers only pay for 6 to 8 weeks off, like by 8 weeks, I was nowhere ready to get back to like fully into, you know, whether it was work or anything else besides still taking care of this child. So anyways, I don't know if you want to add to that, yeah, or share, you know, part of your story.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's so many good points in that that we could go deeper into, but it's interesting. You know, I had this experience where, like I said, when you said halfway through your pregnancy, you thought that you should change providers. I had that same thought. I'll never forget. I went to an appointment by myself, and I could just tell my midwife was beyond frazzled. You know, she had another person in a different room. She was kind of going back and forth. The phone was ringing. She didn't have really a ton of help. And I was dealing with some of my own stressors and concerns as well that I wanted to get addressed. And I remember that she walked out of the room, and I had to have like a little pep talk with myself. I'm like, Elise, this is your body. This is your health. This is your child. You need to ask these questions. I almost had to have like an out of body experience with my higher self, like talking to my, you know, because I don't know about you, but you know, sometimes when we're in these situations, especially in the healthcare space, we're really kind of taught to quiet down, listen to the provider. They know mm-hmm. better, right? And almost as if we don't have a voice, where that's just not true. We have a voice. It's our health. And I want to just normalize that for everyone who's listening, to start to lean into the discomfort of asking questions and making your voice be heard. It is uncomfortable. I'm just going to call a spade, right? And you might get a look. You might get a little bit of a toad, right? From a provider who's, why are you questioning me? Why are you questioning this authority, right? That I have, well, we have a right to do that, to make sure it aligns with our health values, with where we want to go. And it's perfectly okay to do that. And it's okay. And I think, you know, I was thinking about this morning, the oddest things I think about, like, what would I have told my younger self? You know, well, I would have said, Elise, it's okay to find a different provider. But at that time and where I was in space, I just had come up with some different excuses, like, oh, yeah, it won't be another person, or, oh, I'm going to have to deliver at a hospital, or this or that, when I was really headstrong on not doing that. So yeah, I decided to speak up and have a conversation with her. And I said, here are my concerns. Here's what's going on. And here are my husband's concerns. And she said, you know, maybe you should just go and have a delivery at a hospital if you guys are that concerned or something, which, again, red flags, right? And I right. just, if I could go back, I would say, listen to those red flags. Those are yeah. telling you something. Your gut kind of churning, or your heart racing a little bit. That's information your body's talking to you. And so I do remember saying to her, you know, we've paid you, we're going with you. I would appreciate if you could hold a space so we could actually talk about this. Yeah. Because I don't want to go that way. I just want to feel okay and safe that we have a plan moving forward, right? Sure. That's what I really truly needed. And I think that brings in a whole other element that we could have a whole conversation about is having conversations from a space of needs and really getting in touch with that, you know, ourselves. I do think that a lot of the times, and me included, you know, we live in such a world where we're constantly getting outside messages to us, and we need to turn on that external volume and turn up the internal volume. And so anyways, that one experience happened, and it was a little foreshadowing, I would say, unfortunately, mm-hmm. to what really happened during my birth. So my water broke at 10 p.m. This was a very fast birth, I would say, for a first child. It was 13 hours. And I would say for about the 10 hours, okay, 10 hours with the contractions and the, you know, all of that was going on and everything that I had done to prepare, I was doing fairly well in the sense of, like, did it hurt still? Yeah, it hurt. You know? It was not a pleasurable experience, but mm-hmm. I was able to maintain and kind of manage it with all the different hypnosis, breathing techniques and tools that I was using. I used essential oils. We used a spree ball, all that kind of stuff. And then I got in the tub. The tub was so helpful and kind of just, I don't know, just kind of releasing some pressure and also the pain a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so here's where it gets juicy and here's what happened. And mind you, this whole time, I quite frankly really felt isolated. I really felt alone, like I was doing this on my own. I did have a doula there, and I remember my midwife. So I was in the tub, okay? I remember my midwife coming in, and it was 6 a.m., and I hadn't really progressed very much. I think I was dilated 6 centimeters, okay? So we still had 4 centimeters to go. And she came in, and she said, you know, we have a situation. I have another woman who just went into labor, and you can either come get out of the tub since you're only 6 centimeters and come with me to her house and labor at her house. Okay. So if you guys aren't like your mind's not blowing and freaking out. Like, okay. So that was one of my options. We could get in the car and drive a half an hour to the midwife's house. And this other woman was also offered that option as well. So two of us now could be at this woman's house laboring in different rooms. I've never been at this person's house. Like, there's no way I'm getting a car at this point in time. Like,
yeah. No.
So there was this energetic wall that just went up between me and this midwife. And at that point, you know, I just was like, you are done. You are out of my life. You are like nothing to me. I can't even believe that you're even presenting me with these options. None of these are okay. The only option is to stay here with me. That is the only option, right? And I just said to her, I'm not moving. I'm not going anywhere. And my only thought at that moment, and I remember this as clear as day, is even though I wanted to probably, I could have just probably screamed and probably ripped this woman's hair off. But I just remember I have to stay calm for myself in this process and this baby. I don't want to get into a stressed out space. What ended up happening is she left. She took the Doppler, which is the heart rate monitor. She took the oxygen tank. She took everything. And I was there in the tub, still in labor. I did have a doula who was supporting me and kind of coaching me and walking me through this. But at this point, I just kind of almost went into this stoic space where I just got hyper-focused. Well, guess what happened? When she left, and I'm kind of like, you know, her whole energy space like left my space, it was like the floodgates opened, right? And my labor really started to progress and pick up. So she ended up sending a unlicensed midwife to our house, which was not okay on so many levels. And I was able to get out of the tub, and I didn't have a lot of time. I literally was walking to my bed, and they were able to throw down some chuck pads. And I went into, you know, I was in transition, and then I went into basically pushing. Yeah. And this baby came out in 3 pushes. She was healthy. Thank God she was healthy. I was able to have her on my chest. I was able to do the delayed cord clamping and, you know, have some of the things that I had pre-planned and wrote out in a birth plan ahead of time. Obviously, yeah. Who could ever think to plan a
your provider's just leaving you.
Right, which is wrong on so many levels. So that all went okay. You couldn't prepare, I guess, for that.
Sure.
You know, who knew that that was even going to happen? So that was this extra element and layer of trauma, yeah. Quite frankly, mm-hmm. and stress that because that was just not okay by me. That was not ethical on so many levels. It was not a moral thing to do. And I wanted to make sure that that was not going to happen to any other woman again. And unfortunately, throughout my talks and things with some other women who had experienced this midwife, that did happen to them as well. So on top of caring, like yourself, you know, top of caring for this child, I had to also care for myself.
Right.
You know? Figure out how to even manage that and work sure. around that. And so it was a wild experience. And so yeah. I definitely pre-prepped and I feel like I front-loaded my plan for pregnancy and for like the first part of the birthing process. But as far as like the after side of things, that was chaos. I think that's where a lot of support can be, you know, needed. Oftentimes as women, this is probably one of the absolute most vulnerable positions that we are ever in. And it can be very difficult sometimes to speak up in that space, especially when we're experiencing pain and even fear as well. And that would be very helpful probably to have some support around, you know, speaking up, asking those questions, which I ended up, you know, doing eventually when I could with her to understand, you know, her reasoning for why she decided to leave. And yeah. How is she going to rectify that moving forward? Because I certainly don't want anyone else to go through that again.
For sure. Yeah. I think like the red flag piece of knowing that you may need a different provider, whether you're in this type of situation or you're in another situation where maybe you're dealing with an autoimmune condition or whatever else is going on. I did switch providers for my second pregnancy, but during that first one, it was just like, I felt like I was like at the tail end and like it was too hard, or you paid the money already or whatever it was, like that was keeping me from making that decision. I remember even she said to me, the first doctor said, when I talked about a birth plan, she was like joking that the hospital slips C-section orders underneath your birth plan whenever you like come up with this like natural birth plan. And that should have been like, okay, like let me just walk out and see what happens by just showing up at the hospital without a doctor, right? Like who says that to someone? But for some reason, I was just like, oh, okay, that's funny. Not really. Let's move on with this. I mean, thankfully, I have 2 children. And so my second time was a redeeming process, and that I switched doctors to a fabulous OBGYN, and she delivered at a another hospital system that had a tub. You know, I wanted to still be in the hospital environment, but that this other hospital system in town has like a family birthing center and these rooms at this other like sort of satellite place that had a tub. So I ended up sitting in the tub like almost the entire birth minus the pushing part, and then also did essential oils that were calming and pain reducing. And that was, and I didn't, in my first pregnancy was before I knew really anything about functional medicine. Like I knew about paleo and a little bit of like food is medicine, and that there was some food sensitivity things I had heard about. But like my functional medicine journey really started with my daughter's birth and then my health getting out of whack because of this crazy, stressful, traumatic thing. And then her having food allergies and me having then gut problems. And that led us down the path of learning all about this stuff. So at this point, when I'm going on round two, then I had more knowledge about how food affected me, the gut microbiome and how that affected. So I think I had the group B strep positive piece. And so they did want to run antibiotics, but I was like, okay, well, if I have to do that, like I had the probiotics ready for my son as soon as he was born, and I'm like pouring them into his mouth, you know, as we're like doing the first feed. And thankfully, like he's really good on the allergy spectrum, like compared to like the food allergy spectrum. I would say he's probably allergic to grass because when he rolls in grass, he has like hive all over his body, but not great for a soccer player. But yeah, but other than that, like we didn't have that same experience with food and having to be so anxious about feeding foods. So just like learning like little tidbits along the way, but a lot of it was like making that choice to like go down a different direction. Like this didn't work for us. This was, you know, not ideal situation. And the second time we're going to, you know, learn more about the provider that we're going to be working with. We're going to find out more about the hospital system and what the rooms look like and what resources they have. And then we did have a new doula that was there as well, which was a big help. But even in that second situation, so my birth was much faster. It was, I think I went to the hospital, but I don't remember the centimeters and all that stuff. My brain sometimes can't store some of those things in there, but I want to say we got there at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and he was born at 11 something, like between 11 and 12. But I will say like from the energy standpoint, there was a little bit of like, we didn't tell anyone we were going to the hospital this time, which was sort of bad on the other end. But at the time, like it really helped me to like focus and like take care of myself and not worry about people in the lobby or people coming or, you know, doing those kinds of things. I had a friend that was taking care of my daughter and it just could be like me, my husband delivering this baby. So that was one thing that I changed, like going with the second time around. But even like the pushing part, like the second time he came out in like 3 pushes, maybe only one push. But I think still like in my mind, I'm like, dang, I wish I would have slowed down. Like you're in the moment, you're just like, and then I ended up tearing with him and my daughter. But so much of it is like, just like, you're like, okay, I got to do this. Whereas like having the right team around you, whether it's a doula or somebody else to sort of coach you through the process of each of those steps is so important. So it was definitely redeeming, and every birth story is different. So we don't want to scare moms with this kind of conversation, but we do want to help people to understand that they can advocate for themselves and ask those questions and come away if they don't feel comfortable with the situation, you know, knowing that they can pivot to, you know, asking another provider the questions or having another provider even advocate for them. Who knows what the situation is if it's like you want to have a VBAC and because you had a C-section the first time and your provider's not okay with this, but, you know, this is where you need to deliver, like figuring out, you know, who can be okay with it and getting a second opinion even in that with, and not just taking the first person's word for it. And there are risks, you know, with that, just like there's risk with everything, there's risk with other situations too. And so it's really, you know, determining what level of risk you're willing to take. And if you are taking a risk with, like you said, having the backup plan, some of the questions I think you and your husband were asking about the home birth, having like, you know, solid, like, okay, if something happens, we have this tool or we have this plan of action is super important. And I think there's a lot of, whether it's talking about this or another condition, there's a lot of times where when patients are asking questions, providers do meet them with that, like somewhat arrogance or gaslighting type of approach where they're just like, well, I'm the provider, and they don't give the full informed consent or they don't really tell the whole story. And so that is challenging in this environment. And so we have to just really empower people to be advocates for themselves in this healthcare system. I think about that a lot, where people are just so overwhelmed by the healthcare system and also navigating all these specialists and not really actually getting answers, but they're just being sort of, okay, well, if this person can't help you, go to neurology or go to, you know, cardiology or go to this person. And then no one's even talking to each other. And so we really have to be, in order to take care of our health, we have to own it and know that, like you said, our bodies are like what are going to actually be doing the work. And so while there are sometimes drugs that are helpful, a lot of times for chronic conditions, they're not necessarily the end all be all. And certainly there are specialized cases where there's, you know, genetic conditions or something that maybe the drug is the end all be all for you. But for a lot of people, it is, you know, a lot of work that we have to do. And so it takes people a while, like you said, with the mindset thing at the beginning, like to get to that point where you understand that, like, I have to put in the work. It's not the quick fix, the pill or the supplement is going to cure this condition. So shifting that mindset.
Totally. Everyone, you know, I mean, if you think about it, and I actually have to wrap up in just a minute or so, but the providers that you're going to see, right, they've got a schedule, they've got things that they've got to do. And so mm-hmm. their priority is to get you in, get you what you need, and then off you go. Our priority is ourselves. We have to really be our best advocate. And I think about it this way, is you are your CWO. What does that stand for? You're your own chief wellness officer. And think of your provider as being your second in command. You are telling the provider what to do, right? Essentially. Of course, they are going to come in with their expertise as well. And then you've got maybe your coach or your doula or your nurse or someone on your team, this wellness team that you've curated, who's going to really support as well. So when you can start to shift that mindset and come from the space of, you know, every single thing that we do is a choice or a decision, and there's a result that comes out of it, right? But if we go upstream, we can get to our value systems. And if you can get clear on what are your values, what do you value in a provider, what do you value in an experience around health? And it doesn't have to be this long, convoluted exercise. You can literally just grab a piece of paper and bullet point, you know, I value personalized care and attention. I value advocacy. I value like a two-way relationship. Mm-hmm. Whatever that is to you, you can just start writing down some words and use your value systems to kind of bounce these ideas against, bounce people as you're looking for providers against, and see if they fit and align with you and where you want to go. And that would be my best encouragement, is to really understand your values around health and well-being and allow those to guide you. Those typically will not steer you wrong at all.
Yeah, well, that's a great place to wrap up. And the only other thing I would add is just like, it for specifically to this topic with women and expecting moms, like finding your community and finding people to be in your life and be supportive to you afterwards. I still remember, you know, one of my best friends at the time, like sitting, studying for her nursing boards, holding my baby like for 3 hours when my husband was out of town so I could get a 3-hour nap in before like the night duty, you know, started. Yeah. And just, you know, thinking about that and also thinking about that now at this stage where like there's other people around me that need that help, right? And like serving, you know, other people in that capacity, whether it's dropping off meals. I mean, it was a huge help for people to bring over meals. But it, at some levels, like, you know, people bring the meals and that might be it. And your husband or you and your partner are just like, okay, we got to figure this out between the two of us. But there's different levels of support that postpartum doulas that we mentioned, or people that can be there overnight with you for a couple weeks or whatever the support you need is. But that is the one thing I feel like American healthcare system and like delivery, it just like ends that they send you home from the hospital and you're just like on your own, right? You get the couple pieces of paper, the leaflet, watch out for bleeding, like, you know, whatever this size of hemorrhage type thing is. And then like, call us if you're dying, basically. Right. And so there's not that like support. And even things like pelvic floor therapy or things like from the healing standpoint, the physical healing standpoint, that would be so helpful to offer to women so they don't have to figure out 6 months later, oh, I think I actually, you know, have diastasis here, or like have problems here and on their own. It would be phenomenal for every provider to have conversations about like that fourth trimester, like upfront. And so I think if I was going to ask questions to like find a new provider this day and age, it would be like, okay, what kind of support do you recommend during the fourth trimester? And if they say nothing, then it's like, okay, maybe I need to find somebody else that knows a little bit more about like what that stage looks like. And I mean, I guess we can't like fault the healthcare system, OBGYNs, for like not knowing that either, because it's not something they're like talking about in their training. Sure. But if anyone's listening that is involved training OBGYNs, we definitely, you know, moms want that. They want to know that there are resources, whether you have your list of your favorite doulas that you've worked with at the hospital, or your favorite postpartum support meal services, or whatever that looks like, providers could sort of come up with. Or, you know, if you're a provider and maybe you're like me and you're not taking care of women directly that are pregnant, but having like a little handout on the area support services might be something that would be helpful.
Yeah. And asking for help. I know that can be really, really difficult. It was difficult for me to be able to ask for help and just to even say like, I need help, I need support. I am someone who like wants to do it all and have a people pleaser attitude, and I'll just figure it out. But being able to just really voice what your needs are can be so helpful.
Yes. Yes. Well, thank you so much for sharing. I know it's a vulnerable time to share some of those things that were challenges. So I appreciate that. And I know that people listening are going to benefit from that. But I think I might title this like finding your voice as a patient through our birth story or something like that. Cause we talked about the birth stories, but I think like the end all be all is like how you find your voice as an advocate for yourself and healthcare.
I like your questions that you asked too. And yeah, thank you for sharing your story as well. And I think we need to create a safe space where we can share our stories and really learn from them and grow from them, because they are a part of us. They help shape us.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We're excited you are on your journey with us. Find us online at farmtotable.life, farm with a P, and on Instagram at farmtotableteam.